With all of that plastic production comes plastic waste. A new novel imagines a future where that's all we're left with. Imagine an Appalachia where there are no longer four seasons, and where climate disasters have knocked out infrastructure and created a society where plastic trash becomes a valuable commodity. Allison Stein, author of Trashlands, goes there. Trashlands takes place in an eponymous junkyard, where decades into the future, a group of people try to squeeze an existence out of the scraps that remain from our modern way of life. The central character, Coral, named for the coral root orchid, which has gone extinct, struggles to keep her family together and to make sense out of this dystopian reality. I recently spoke with Stein about some of the themes in Trashlands. This book takes place in the future after life-altering floods and fires as a result of climate change. And Appalachia is now known as Scrapalachia. Can you describe this imagined version of the region?
I think of my novels, including this book, Trashlands, as our world, only tweaked a little bit. It's a little more extreme. I kind of feel like this may be a way that we're heading. And in this book, there is so much plastic in the world that it's used as currency. Plastic is one of the only things of value, or at least they make it have value, still left. And so I was thinking about, you know, in the wake of these kind of 100-year floods, worse than 100-year floods, right, these unprecedented floods, what would be left when the waters recede? And I think it would be plastic, something we have a lot of now. And so I live for most of my adult life in Appalachian Ohio. And, you know, some people still consider that part of the country kind of a wasteland or a big junkyard. And so I decided to just take that idea, which I think is false, of course, and put it to the extreme. It's full of junk now. It's full of scrap. And so it's called Scrapalachia.
And in Scrapalachia, people work as pluckers. They are nomadic and they risk their lives to pick plastic like bottle caps from rivers and other places to sell. As you mentioned, plastic is also the currency. Something that stuck with me from the book is when one of the characters looks at a plastic coffee cup and imagines a time, our time, when people only used an item like this once and then threw it away. Are you hoping readers will think about their own consumption?
You know, I'm a novelist, so I don't set out to, like, have a moral in my stories or teach a lesson. You know, I really just want to tell a good story. And this is the story that came to me in a dream. And so this is the story I'm telling. But, you know, of course, the environment is very important to my life, as I think it should be to everyone's. But I was raised by family farmers. Everyone in my family, both sides, forever have been small family farmers. So I learned early on, you know, how important the earth is and how to take care of it and how it's changing. You know, farmers are going to be the first to notice how it's changing, or were the first to notice. And so it makes sense that those concerns, because there's so much in my life, they're going to be in my fiction too, you know. And my day job is in journalism, so I know what it's like to try to, you know, teach someone or to try to give light to an important issue. But I think that we can learn from fiction too, and we can learn from art. And if someone comes away from my book and thinks a little bit more about how they're consuming, or thinks a little bit more about the earth or pays attention to it, I think that's the best we can hope for as storytellers of all kinds.
I know you did a lot of research for this book because there are a lot of environmental themes in it. For example, the numbers on plastic items, like the 1, the 2, to tell you how to recycle them, those numbers, which don't really mean that much to us now because there's really no way to recycle some of these items.
It was kind of depressing, the research I had to do. You know, when I first write stories, I just write. I don't really outline. I'm more of a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of writer because I like to be surprised and I like to not know where I'm going. And so I just let the story take over. But, you know, after the first draft, it became clear that I was going to have to learn a lot about plastic. And I did. You know, I learned what plastic floats and what sinks, what even today really can't be recycled because it's so thin and cheap. And, you know, whether it's worth it for corporations to recycle or it's cheaper for them to make a new bottle. You know, these are all these uncomfortable truths that I had to wrestle with, even with this fiction book, you know, to make it real.
The plastic that is sold in Scrapalachia is sent to factories to be made into plastic bricks that people are using to build with in cities, other places. There are still cities in this future where you can get medicine. They even have newspapers. But people in Scrapalachia are really disconnected from that because there's no real roads or electricity or cell phones anymore. It's just a place where this resource that's needed, this plastic, comes from, and the environment is wrecked for the people who live there, which sounds kind of familiar. How did you use the history of energy extraction in Appalachia to create this version of the future?
I've lived in Appalachian, Ohio for most of my adult life. My son was born there at home, and I lived in kind of a small remote town that does have this history. And the history is everywhere when you live in a place like that, as it is in a lot of parts of Appalachia, you know. You know where the mines are. Some of them are open. Most of them are closed. I wrote an essay once which told the true story that some children in my hometown, they color the rivers on their little drawings in kindergartens red or orange because that's the color of the creeks in the woods, you know. For a long time, my son and his classmates couldn't drink the water at their school. The water fountains were covered over with garbage bags because there was lead in the water. So I think when it's everywhere, I think it's easier to think about, you know, if you pay attention, I think you can see the legacy of that kind of exploitation, and that it's not a history, you know, it's still ongoing, and it happens every day. So I was thinking of a way to talk about it without talking about it. You know, the characters in the book are not miners, they're not frackers, but they do, you know, try to take the little resources they have out of this very ravaged countryside.
There's also a flip side to the kind of scarcity that is in the book, the ingenuity of the people of Scrapalachia, reusing plastic items like a notebook spiral for a splint or a hair tie. And the main character, Coral, is an artist. She uses scraps to create sculptures in the woods. Can you talk about that theme of resilience and possibility in the book?
I'm really glad that you got that theme out of it because I think as writers, you should stay away from certain reviews of your books. but it is hard, you know, to come across them sometimes. And I think some people have dismissed my book because they're worried it's going to be dark, you know. And actually, I think the opposite is true. I think that in a book about the end of the world, we need to think about what world would be next, right? How would we make the new world? And maybe we can make the new world center women. And maybe we can make the new world be more environmentally conscious and be more aware of, you know, the exploitation that had happened before. So I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is, you know, pulling from my own life. And my own life didn't go the way I planned. I'm a single mom and I didn't plan that. I went to school to be a professor and I never got that job. And so I think, you know, pulling from that kind of resilience and that kind of making do that I've had to do for a big part of my life, I think helps a lot. I also think that there's still beauty everywhere, you know? Even at the end of the world, there's going to be art and there's going to be dance and there's going to be music. So who are the people that are going to make it and how are they going to make it? And it makes sense for me that Coral is a junk artist. That's the materials that she has, right? So just like she's making a life out of scrap, you know, she's making art out of leftover plastic.
Would you be willing to read a little piece of the book?
Sure. Coral had been born into plucking, born in Scrapalachia. Mr. Fall said it had been called Appalachia without the scrap once. The old states that made up the region stretched from what was now the border of the Els, short for the elites, the coastal cities that still had semi-regular power and newspapers, all the way down to the edge of the deep, or deep south. In the middle of the country were the flyovers, overgrown farmland and old manufacturing plants, whose empty shells rose out of fields. Scrapalachia had the trash, mountains of it. After the floods, some regions were lost. Some were given up on. No one worked to restore power to Scrapalachia, for example, though Mr. Fall said there were hundreds of people who worked on electricity in the Els, doing what they could to keep the lights on for the cities. Why them? Coral had asked him. Why not us? We were poor, he had said. We didn't have voices that anyone important would listen to. People didn't understand what it was like to live here. Who was important, Coral had asked him, and who was not? He didn't have an answer to that.
Thank you. You know, I feel like your description of Scrapalachia sort of as a backward place, a forgotten place, is in some ways how some people who don't live in this region think of Appalachia and Appalachians. Somewhere else in the book, I think one of the characters says that, you know, the people who live in Appalachia should tell their own story. Is that something that you were thinking of when you wrote the book?
Absolutely. I mean, my day job is in journalism, like I said, and I was living in Appalachia during the last presidential election. And, you know, reporters who don't live there kind of descend upon the region and, you know, want to meet somebody in a diner and want to sum everything up in an afternoon and then fly home, you know, and I just got so tired of it. There is a character in Trashlands who is a bit of, you know, what we would call a parachute journalist, right? He's from the L's, the city. He comes in and he thinks he's going to write this story. And then he meets people and he falls in love with the region and things change. And so I think he starts to question, you know, should I even tell this story? Or I could never know this story from only being here for a short time. And also that there are many stories. That's the other thing. I mean, I think sometimes people dismiss Appalachia and even Ohio and the Midwest as like one big monolith, but there are really big cities there and there are really small rural towns, you know. There is art and there is culture and there is science and technology and there are empty factories. I mean, it's just, it's not one thing. And I think that people struggle with that. And so I hope that's something that, you know, maybe someone might take away from the book, too, is that there are many stories. And this is just one.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me and for your wonderful questions.
Allison Stein is the author of the new speculative fiction novel Trashlands and the staff culture writer at Salon. Her previous novel, Road Out of Winter, won the 2021 Philip K. Dick Award. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple.